Welcome to the Entrepreneurial Leap Podcast. I'm your host, Rob Dubay. For context, this podcast is inspired by the book Entrepreneurial Leap by Gino Wickman. Gino is the founder of EOS Worldwide and an author with over 2 million copies of his books sold worldwide. Now, in his next phase, he is taking his passion for helping entrepreneurs by partnering with five equally passionate, successful entrepreneurs, myself included, who have created the eLeap Academy, where we teach the content from the book in a one-year program guaranteed to increase the success of early-stage businesses. Now, a quick note about me. I've been an entrepreneur since the age of 14 when I started my first business selling blow pop lollipops out of my locker with my best friend. I ran a company that I sold to a public company and later bought back. I'm an author, speaker, host of an annual leadership retreat, and I'm partners in several other businesses. I'll be your host for the Entrepreneurial Leap Podcast, where every other week, you will be hearing life stories from successful entrepreneurs who took the leap into entrepreneurship. You will learn from their mistakes and successes and be inspired as you move forward on your journey. Now, before I introduce my guest, I'm going to share with you a bit about eLeap Academy. The Entrepreneurial Leap Academy provides an immersive 9-month experience for new entrepreneurs with a focus on the three C's: clarity, confidence, and community. Let's start with the first C, clarity. You will learn to be clear about who you are, what you want from your business, and how to get it. The next C, confidence. You will learn to be confident you're on the right path, equipped with powerful mindset tools. The last C, connected. You will become connected to a community of entrepreneurs just like you. Now, all participants receive 4 full-day in-person classes led by experienced entrepreneurs to equip you with the tools and strategies necessary to build a successful business. The Academy's dynamic community connects participants with a tribe of like-minded individuals for support and networking opportunities during and between classes. Students also receive a seasoned mentor offering personalized guidance and expertise to help you navigate the challenges of entrepreneurship. To start building the business of your dreams, visit our website at e-leap.com. Again, that's e-leap.com. There you can learn more about and sign up for the next Entrepreneurial Leap Academy. Today's guest is Andrew Sassen with Recovery Unplugged. Over the past 25 years, Andrew has grown as a South Florida business leader and community advocate. His experience, passion, and advocacy have led him to be asked to sit on the boards of such inspiring organizations as Nova Southeastern University, the Face the Music Foundation, the Jewish Center for Science, as well as being a member of the United Way. Andrew holds a Bachelor of Science in Business Administration from the University of Florida and is a graduate of the Tony Robbins Mastery University Business Mastery and Leadership Academy programs and a former student of the Jack Canfield Breakthrough to Success program. In his work with Recovery Unplugged Behavioral Health, he has led the consistent, proactive, and responsible expansion of the company from a singular treatment facility in South Florida to a national mental health and addiction treatment organization, which now helps thousands of clients per year from all over the country find their way to long-lasting recovery and stability. You are going to hear lots of nuggets from this serial entrepreneurial today. So please enjoy my chat with Andrew. Andrew, thank you for joining me today. I'm so grateful for your time. I know how busy you are. You're a serial entrepreneur, so this is amazing to be able to spend time with you. And I know there's going to be many nuggets of wisdom coming out of this conversation. So thanks for your time. I appreciate
it. Thank you for having me. Grateful to be here.
Absolutely. Sometimes I start with a quote, and I was, doing a little bit of background on you, and this one kind of popped into my mind as I was reading some things and listening to some things. And the quote that I grabbed was this: suddenly the honesty, people opening up and sharing how sick and suffering they are. And I grabbed that from a video that's on the main page of your website from Richie Supa. And I'm just wondering if you can kind of draw on that wisdom and what he's saying and share what comes to mind when you hear that.
Well, you know, what Richie's talking about, and just to preface this, Richie's one of the most talented musicians around, you know, for the last 6 years. Toured with, rock bands and wrote over 200 hits. And so his creativity is the reason why we have Recovery Unplugged. And so what he means by that is, you know, allowing people to, when we use music as a catalyst for therapy, that allows people to open up and really go deep into the challenges that they're facing that other modalities wasn't working, which is why we created this.
Yeah, it's really amazing what you're doing. I'm excited to get into it. But first, I want to ask you, I mentioned at the outset, you're a serial entrepreneur. And we were talking right before we started recording. Can you share the story that you shared with me about talking to your son about this and him asking about how many companies you registered?
So my son, Jacob, he's 15. He's been to two Tony Robbins seminars with me. He decided he's reading, trying to read a book every 2 weeks, a business book. And so we were talking about doing this podcast today, and he said to me, how many companies have I started? And I couldn't even answer him. So I went on SunBiz, which is the Florida registry, and there were about 20 different, there were several pages from when I was 18 years old till now, because it keeps everything. Several pages of different companies that I've started over the years at different times. And I remember most of them, but when I was reading it last night, it reminded me of a few different things that I've been involved with, because I've always been interested in business, starting a business. That's just my mindset of doing what I can myself to create the future.
Yeah. Talk about the early days. When you were a kid, I mean, you were right out of the gate starting little businesses and doing little things to make a buck.
I mean, I literally, like the old, many stories of people selling candy at school, but I literally sold candy at school. There was a candy store, 10 blocks from where I lived. I went there, I made a deal with the owner, and, I brought candy to school every day to sell. I mean, I started that when I was in fifth grade. I mean, and I did that through, middle school. And then I started working, passing out flyers. I worked at Baskin Robbins. So I always had a job at a place and then my own thing as well. I've always had those two things going when I was in high school, and just kept that going, throughout high school and then in college. I mean, I had a long distance plan deal where I went to Miami, and this is back in the 90s, where before everybody had cell phones. So there's a gentleman that, was the biggest, he sold the phone cards. So I would buy phone cards from him, bring them to, I went to University of Florida. I'd bring them to Orlando, UCF, Gainesville, and I'd buy them in bulk from him and sell them, to people that wanted to call home. And then I had other people doing that for me. And that turned into a deal where I started signing people up for credit cards. And, that funny little story was I literally had a setup in Gainesville by Turlington Hall. And I didn't have people paid, at the time, $250,000, to have a permit to sell things on campus. I just set up a table, and I was giving away shirts. People were signing up. I had people outside of Disney World. I had people outside of Universal and UCF. I didn't have a permit for any of this. don't suggest doing that now, but at the time it just, you know, it worked until they asked me for my permit. I didn't know I needed.
I love it. I love it. And talk about when you opened your first bank account. What was that like?
So it's interesting. I remember, I know the day. It was August 19th, 1989.
How do you remember that day?
I'm good. I joke with a lot of my friends. I've always remembered numbers, dates of things over the years. So I remember it was called Barnett Bank, which was then bought three times as Bank of America now. It was right here. I live 2 miles from where I grew up. And I had worked at the insurance agency that summer. I was 10 years old, and $70 was, you know, my entering my first bank account. I remember the book I had, little book I had. I kept track of everything. And I still have that bank account.
You still have that bank account?
Yep.
That's amazing. Yeah. Wait, did you say you were 10 years old?
I was 10 years old. Yes.
You still have that bank account since you were 10 years old. That's unbelievable. Is it true that you started an Amway group when you were 16 years old?
Yes. So when I, so my best friend, Grant, his father, who one of my mentors to this day. So when I was a kid, Steve introduced me to the world of personal development. And so when I was 14, I watched the movie Rudy. I went out for the football team. I made it only because I refused to get off the field. I was not good. I had no talent, but I had a lot of heart. And when my heel bone separated, trying to tackle a gentleman who ended up playing 6 years in the NFL and is still a friend of mine, the doctor said I had a better chance of owning a team than ever playing for one. And my friend's dad gave me these tapes from Zig Ziglar. And Grant's dad, Steve was in Amway. And so he brought me to these big events. I mean, I remember my first huge event at Dolphin Stadium with Zig. And then I got to meet Les Brown with him. And then he also gave me the Tony Robbins. My uncle had given me the Tony Robbins tapes. And then Steve brought me to my first Tony Robbins seminar.
Wow.
And so when I was 16, I started my own Amway group. And then when I went to University of Florida, I created a store in my dorm because people would be smoking or drinking every night. And I would sell the munchies at 2 o'clock in the morning.
That's great.
You know, I had Doritos and Pringle and all the stuff, you know, and I did that and it worked.
Amazing. So Steve, who's your best friend's father, was really instrumental in getting your mindset around people like Zig Ziglar and Les Brown and Tony Robbins, these kind of trailblazers.
Oh, yeah.
For this kind of stuff. Interesting. And I also learned, if this is true, please confirm if it is or isn't. Did you actually have your insurance license when you were 18?
Yeah. I went and got my insurance license when I was
18. So while you were in college or before?
Right. My first summer of college.
Wow. Yeah. And did you practice? Did you actually sell insurance?
Yeah. So I, it was one of the other things I did. It actually became my career for 17 years. So I got my insurance license to get it because I had met some people. My uncle, my grandfather had an insurance agency, but I had met some people that at the time to me were what I viewed as extremely successful, right? They had the nice cars. They went on the nice trips. They wrote the big checks, donations, and they sold insurance. So I was like, I should do this too. You know, one of the 12 things I was doing. And so I got my insurance license, and my deal back then with my friends in college, thinking about selling life insurance to college kids. Oh, it's funny. I the way my pitch worked was you'll get a free blood test. So, you know, going back to the 90s, the world's different today. So I tell all my friends, you know, you guys are going out, having a great time. You may want to have a test your system out. So I sold insurance based on people getting a free blood test. And if I fast forward, I have a couple of friends that joke that they have the policies I did for them then. I have one person in particular, it was the biggest policy I sold when I was in college. And he was out of college already, and he had started making money. And he's called me recently. I saw him a couple months ago. He said, you know, I have over $1 million in cash value from the policy you sold me in 1998.
Oh my gosh.
And so I was like, you're welcome. that happened. But yeah, so I was selling the long distance cards. I was had people working for me and I was doing the credit cards. And then personally, you know, while earning, I always had something I'd earn money while I was doing something else. So I would sell insurance and had my insurance license to this day. That ended up becoming what I did for a living. I built an insurance agency. I was licensed in 40 states at one point. And that all started, you know, because it just seemed like some way to earn an income.
Amazing. So, you know, one of the things that we talk about is as somebody who's an early stage entrepreneur, should they go to college? And obviously you did, and you're a serial entrepreneur. So as you look back on that, you know, what is your thoughts on going to college? Was that a valuable experience for you? If you had to do it over, would you maybe just jump into business?
The very difficult question. My son and I talk about this lately a lot.
Interesting.
And so, you know, for me, I attempted to drop out of college 3 times. My wife, who was just my friend, I went to middle school, high school, college with my wife. We were friends back then. We started dating after college. She would always just re-register me. And so for me, college for me was so beneficial in learning what to do and what not to do in business. So I really never went to a class after my first semester, but I kept a full scholarship throughout college. I have a degree in business administration from University of Florida because I would just show up and take tests. And I knew that I had to keep a 3.2 to keep my scholarship. And I was, you know, blessed with the ability to take my wife's notes and study the night before and pass a test. But for me, college was, I sold the long distance cards. I sold the, signed people up for credit cards. I sold insurance. I also sold actual, the credit card machines. And I mean, I got paid. That was one of the great deals. I had a couple of restaurants and a tattoo shop where, you know, I was going door to door, getting people to switch to the credit card processing company. I got paid for that for 10 years. I had people that worked for me. I started a record label. I took out student loans. I didn't need student loans. I got student loans to start a record label that ended up going bankrupt, but I ended up learning a tremendous amount from that. So I will preface it by saying that for me, college was a great way to, I'm friends with people that I met in college, that I'm friends with today. I've done business with people that I met in college that have been successful and not successful. And the learning experience, the way that I set up college for me, was the best thing I did because I did a semester in London and I did the same thing there. I showed up once a week and took tests, but that opened my mind to the world and I got to sleep at night. You know, I grabbed a backpack. I had a test every Wednesday. So I'd grab a backpack every Wednesday night, travel to wherever I could. I slept in hostels. I slept on the bench one night. I showed back up every Tuesday to take a test. I would not have had any of those experiences. And I've now traveled to 70 countries. And that all was because I was in college. So my statement would be the true idea of figuring out who you are and what to do. You know, I was able to have full-time job, start several companies, some failed, and get a degree. The degree, okay, you know, I wouldn't have been able to do any of that without being at University of Florida.
Yeah, okay. So interesting, you know, that some of these businesses failed. Many were successful and are successful. And I'm curious, when it's failing in the moment, so if you can reflect back into the moment, because my sense in speaking with you, and I think some of your mindset is everything's great, a lesson that's going to help me in the future. But when you're going through, like you mentioned, one of the companies, the record label, was bankrupt. You know, can you take us to that moment and what that felt like for you?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest challenge with the especially when I was young, with the delusion you have to put yourself through to start something.
I love that.
Continue it on. There's a fine line between, you know, pushing yourself forward, overcoming challenges, and knowing when something is not going to be going any further. And I would say I am definitely, it's taken me most of my life to understand that difference. I mean, when I was younger, I mean, I would just keep going until it was all, I mean, I did not believe in the idea that anything that I was part of could fail. And so I've had several things fail. And so looking back, I needed that to happen to be able to do what I'm doing today and grow what I've grown today. And so, you know, I would say looking back at the time, I mean, I was very upset. I would not accept, right, defeat as I looked at it back then. But when money runs out, money runs out.
Right? Yeah.
So looking at it as it's a function of having to go through it. And now the other side of that coin is nothing I would have done would have gotten as far as it did without just, you know, pure willpower, mindset and motivation from both myself and the people around me. Yeah. So crafting that over the years and, you know, going through those experiences have allowed me to become a better leader today. I wouldn't be able to do what we do today with 430 plus full-time employees across multiple states had I not had those experiences in the past.
Yes. So when do you look back and say the first real company, like where it really became a company, there were employees, there was, you know, as opposed to, you know, some of the other things, when was that for you? What was the company that you look at and say that was like, I was building something there?
Well, my insurance agency, for sure. I mean, that was small, but, you know, it started with just me selling insurance and then one employees, two employees, three employees, five employees, eight employees. You know, that was a company that was built that still exists today. And there's a few people that are still there. I have not been active in that in many years, but I still get, you know, stay involved. So that was the first company that wasn't just some, you know, idea. That was something that was, you know, constant, people involved, still involved now since officially 2002. So however long ago that is.
2002.
So
22 years.
Yeah. And so, you know, that's the first thing that went from there. And then from there, on a bigger scale, I helped start a outsourcing call center, which, you know, started here in Hollywood, Florida with three of us. That was in 06. And I mean, the funny part about that was, I mean, today I'm not part of that anymore, but that grew into a 50 person call center and then 200 people in Santo Domingo. And I believe he has 300 people in Trinidad in that business now. But the best part about that was, you know, new company, three people, two part-time. And the best story there was trying to land a big account. Guy wants to see the office. Never forget this. So he says, okay, I'm coming down at 2 o'clock today. This was at 10 o'clock in the morning. So we literally called all of our friends to come to the office. We had desks, we had chairs, we had phones, and people just sit there and pretend like they were doing something. And then we got that account and then had to hire all the people and did a fantastic job. And it was the biggest account we had there for several years. But that only happened because when he came to see us, it looked like we had what we thought we would. And we did it.
Amazing. Amazing. Have most of your businesses been, other than the one you're currently involved with, in financial services of some way, or did it run the gamut?
No. That was an outsourcing call center, debt settlement, credit repair. That was that company. The record label, I have a company that I helped start that funds personal injury cases since 2007. as well. And then I've helped other people start companies as well.
Okay.
Meaning, I've helped raise money, provide, not just the capital, but just help people start a business, help them find an accountant, help them find the right attorney. I've done that for many people. Mm-hmm.
As a mentor or as a business partner?
Both. Mm-hmm. Both. A couple of them, I said, I don't have the time and capital to be partners with you, but I'll help you, right? Call me. Yeah. Tell you what to do, what not to do. You don't have to listen to what I say, but, take my opinion into consideration. I love doing that as well when I know I can be helpful.
Talk about the importance of mentors in your life. Steve was obviously important to you. Were there others as you were going through this, as you go through this entrepreneurial journey?
Sure. I mean, I look at, from an indirect world, the Tony Robbins world. I've been around that world, like I said, since I was younger. And I've done 23 UPWs. I've walked on fire 19 times.
UPW?
Sorry, Unleash the Power Within, which is like the Tony Robbins, I call it the introductory seminar. And so being in that world has provided the mentorship from not just, listening to Tony's stuff, but also, I did work with Jack Canfield, who wrote all the Chicken Soup books, Esther Hicks, The Law of Attraction. So I've believed in, taking different pieces from different people, not just what they say. So I'll read their book, I'll listen to the tape, I'll go to the seminar, with Tony or with Jack. I've gone even deeper to work with them, directly with Jack and spent the week with him. And so I've always believed that, not everybody is able to do everything or teach everything, but 10 different people can teach one thing that I could benefit from. So mm-hmm. I've utilized the personal development world as mentorship for me, throughout my life.
Can you talk about the investment in time and money that you've made? You don't have to use specific numbers, but I think sometimes, especially in an early stage, some might say to themselves, I would love to do a Tony Robbins seminar, or I'd love to do this or that, but the budget and time and, that kind of thing.
I've had this debate my whole life.
You have.
So today it's not a debate because people see anything that I, my life. And so now people listen, but they didn't before. I had screaming matches. I've had chairs thrown at me, literally people when I was young, when I was in my 20s, and people are going, are you out of your damn mind? My dad, I love my dad, but so I'll preface it like this. In 2002, my dad called me and said, hey, I have a client who's as dumb as you, that's spending their money at this Tony event. You got to meet him. So he tells me his name. And I said, I did meet him. I met him a couple of years ago. I went to sell him insurance and he threw me out of his office. And I said, so when I see him this time, hopefully he's not such a prick. So me and him both meet up at the Tony Robbins event in Dallas. And, we're both joking how my dad's an accountant, or both of our accountants, and doesn't believe in any of this at the time. And we become best friends. I'm the godfather to his children, and he's the co-founder of Recovery Unplugged. And so, I mean, if to me that alone, right? I'm here today because of that seminar. But at the time, people would say to me, especially in the younger days, you're spending 5 days, you can't afford 5 days. When I went to my first UPW, I called Steve after the pitch and said, Steve, I just signed up to the whole program, everything, the Master University. It's $10,000. I don't have $10,000. I was in college. I took out 3 credit cards that had $2,500 and $3,000 limits. I remember them too, the Discover to Visa. I put them down. I was still short $1,000 that I had to come up with. Amazing. And then I convinced my best friend Grant, who also was living at home, like, if I'm doing this, you got to do this as well. And I was just told by everybody at the time. It was dumb. It was a waste. It was ridiculous. It was the single best thing I ever did. That propelled me on. And so every year, like I said, for the last 23 years now, I spent a week to go to there, 4 days to go to the UPW and other seminars. I've always taken time out. And I believe that anybody that's going to be an entrepreneur, now today it's a lot easier. You go on YouTube, you don't have to leave your house, you can listen to all seminars. And virtually, depending on where you're located, may be great. I am old school. I like to talk to people. I like to go to, I'd rather have, break bread or have lunch or dinner or breakfast with somebody. I like to go to events. I do believe you can, in 2024, get information, virtually. I have a virtual program. It's fantastic. But when possible, I believe you need to get up, get out, and be in a room if you can. Financially speaking, I have spent, I don't even know the amount, but I will say this. Back in the day, I said to every person I know, 2005, 2004, Tony was coming to Miami. I said to everybody I know, come to the seminar. I'll buy your ticket. If you can't, if you find no value, don't ever pay me back. I had 55 people I got tickets for. Every single person that went found value. They didn't all have life-changing experiences. It wasn't the greatest thing ever. Some of them it was. But every one of them found value and has gone on to, just amazing things since then. Several, I could just think of the stories from that point to today that have built companies, businesses, and lives. And not just with Tony's stuff, with Jack Canfield's stuff or Esther's stuff or, that world. And yeah. I think it's invaluable because mindset is everything. I invest time every morning and every night. People ask me, "Why? How are you happy?" I'm not happy. I'm just as, messed up as everybody else out there. I just spend a few minutes every morning and every night to use my 5-minute journal. I'm not big into writing, but I'll use my 3 minutes in the morning, 2 minutes at night. And I listen to things every morning, every night to help my brain. It's, just as crazy as everybody else's. So I know that I need that help every day.
Yeah. What's the routine? You say you have a 5-minute journal. You listen to things. When do you do it in the morning? When do you do it in the evening?
So every morning I pray every morning. In Judaism, there's a thing called tefillin, which is a box. There's two boxes, the easiest way to explain it. One goes on your arm, one goes on your head. It connects your mind, your body, and your soul. So I do the prayer every morning. I do it from my house. Some people go somewhere. I do it here. Yeah. Or wherever I am, I travel. And right after that, I have different things playing in the background. Different minds of things playing for the first 30 minutes as I'm getting ready for my day every day. Yeah. And then every night. And I also write in my journal, 3 minutes, what I'm grateful for, what I want to accomplish. And every night I have something playing, as well. A lot of times my favorite thing these days is, everything is always working out for me, which is a rampage incantation of Esther Hicks. So I have that playing, and then I write in my journal at night. And so, I update that, when it does, but that's what worked for me. And I believe that, anybody that's going to be, getting out in the, if you're going to try and build something and you're going to try and do something, it's not easy. Right. And if it is, everybody would do it. So, if you believe that you're just going to go do it on your own, good luck. But I believe, for me at least, that you need to have, the help. And with technology today, I could have, all of these different wonderful people that have had, great, decades of learning of what helps the mind and the body and, the mindset. If I could use them in my life, why wouldn't I?
Absolutely. You talked about indirect mentors. What about direct mentors? Have you had people in your life that have been helpful? Again, Steve was one of those people, but have there been others, business mentors, family mentors, anything like that?
For sure. So when I was a kid, my grandfather, old school, Brooklyn guy, door-to-door filler brush salesman and insurance door-to-door salesman.
So no when kidding.
I worked for him and my uncle from the time I was 8 till I was 18, among other things. They had the insurance agency. So, he had a small business, and I got to see how he operated. And so I got to see how he took care of people. He had an insurance agency in a very, low-income area in Miami. And I watched how everybody in the neighborhood treated him because he helped everybody, right? Didn't just help everybody by giving people things. He gave people jobs and just, helped other people do well. So what I learned from him early on is you take care of people around you, they'll take care of you. And so he was always successful because he was able to, go out of his way to help the people around him. And then they used his business. And as I grew from there, I've been involved in many different charitable organizations. And so, there's a gentleman, Benjay, who is now my friend. But early on, I saw this guy who was very outspoken about philanthropy. And, when I was younger, I didn't understand this guy's a little crazy. But then I realized he truly believes in giving back and giving back for a reason, and giving back to causes. And, we became friends over the last, 15 years now. And he's extremely successful in real estate and he stays focused on what he's doing, but he believes and wants to always be around other people that want to do good, improve themselves and give back. And so, I try and get together with him once every couple months, just to talk because he's a little bit older. He's written a great book, about where he is. He's written another book right now. And so, he's been another mentor. And I always joke that, my goal is to be able to be as philanthropic as he is.
I love it. I love it. And can you talk about we have two things that we present as a teaching from the book, Entrepreneurial Leap, which is the story of the dream and the story of the nightmare. And I'm curious if either one of those come up for you. This is like the thing that went so amazing, you couldn't even believe it, or the thing that was just so hard. It was, very difficult time in your entrepreneurial career.
Yep. Okay. So in looking at, creating the future, right? I am living in a house that I wrote. I built this house and I wrote what I would want to live in the future when I was in Fiji in 2003 at a Tony Robbins seminar that I, couldn't afford to be at, that I used credit card debt to go to. And Jeez. That was free. And I built the house that I live in now in 2015. It took 2 years to build. It was supposed to be a 6-month renovation. It ended up being a knockdown. It ended up being this whole crazy thing. But I wrote the dream. Right? My dream house. The only difference is it was originally in my head on the beach. And then because of where I live and I walk to synagogue, it's in the neighborhood that I'm in now because there is no availability or walking distance to the synagogue. So I built this dream house and I wrote it a dozen years before I built it. And I created, what I believed to be the ability to build it when I did. Went a little overboard and a little crazy. But because of COVID and all of the New Yorkers that moved down here to South Florida, yeah. I went from this big, new, amazing house to the guest house compared to what's been built around me in the last 24 months, which is fantastic. So I built this, I created this dream in my mind of what the life I wanted to live, of what I wanted to do. And that was in 2003. Fiji, about the house I wanted to have. I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I wanted to have a company. I wanted to have more than 100 employees. I wanted to have more than 10 million in revenue. Like, I had created this idea and different iterations got there. The same dream became a nightmare because, as I built Recovery Unplugged, we got into these the shortest way to describe it is we used to be a fully out of network, and now we're fully in network with every insurance company. And so I won't mention any names, but there were some challenges where we provided amazing services, saved people's lives, and couldn't get paid. And it was an industry thing, but we were days away from insolvency.
Wow.
And, you know, 5 years ago, and I had to literally scramble to, I had done everything they told you not to do. Personally guaranteed all the loans, emptied the kids' college funds, mortgaged the house, everything, and had to end up, taking on anything that I could, partners, capital to stay. And I'm truly grateful for those, the group that came in to help us, because they came in at the last moment where we had 24 hours and never missed payroll and never will. Without them, we wouldn't be here. But it was a tumultuous 18 months of working with people that meant well, that had a completely different view and vision of what should be done.
Yeah.
And I had to live that every day. And it was my doing, right? We went with sheer willpower to become what we were at the time. And the assumption was, we'll just, we're doing this work, we're just going to get paid. I didn't realize how dangerous game it is to play with these insurance companies. And even though we were right and we won the case, how that goes with attorneys.
Yeah.
And so it all worked out, but the dream of what I built in helping people, saving lives, and being successful, over the course of less than a year, came to the point of almost disaster and losing everything. And then having to work with people that, again, without them, we wouldn't be here. They meant well, but had a different vision. And I had to live their vision.
Yeah.
A completely different way of doing things for over a year. And every day was truly, where did I go wrong on this? Now, at the time, I had some people that still don't like the personal development world. They're like, well, you created it, didn't you? Right. And so, and my response to them is I did. And obviously, if you have faith religiously or universally, and I do. So I said, okay, there's a reason why this is happening. And I'm just going to have to keep pushing forward and getting through it. And so we ended up pushing forward, getting through it, buying them out 4 years ago, and again, it was one of those things that we are better, stronger company today because of it, but it literally turned into I'm going to have to lose the dream house and, let my wife know that it's all gone. Not that she really cares, because we both come from nothing and she's fine with that. It's me that likes all the stuff. So the dream became the nightmare.
Wow. That is such a great story.
And then we got through it. We got through it.
Yeah. I was looking into what you're doing now and kind of where you came from, some of your previous experiences, I thought it's quite remarkable, this business that you're in now and the way that your approach at Recovery Unplugged is to helping addiction and these kinds of problems. And, one of the things we talk about is the bigger the problem that you solve in the world, the more successful you'll be. Can you talk about how you ended up in this business for now, like 10 years or so, have you been doing this?
Yeah.
And just what that journey's been like. And then just a second part to it, if you remember, and I'll prompt you if you don't, but what is it that's different in terms of your approach?
Sure. So as I said, I grew up with my wife. And so I saw early on, she had several family members that were battling addiction since we were younger. And so after we got married, we saw some people that got worse and worse and worse. And, we were funding all of this treatment. And so I had made a joke to Marshall, who I had met at the Tony Robbins seminar years earlier. He's a criminal defense attorney. And I made a joke that it'd be cheaper for me to open up my own treatment center than keep paying for all these other ones. And one of my family members got arrested by an undercover DEA agent that was my friend I grew up with, which is its own movie one day. and she was going to get sentenced to, her and her cousin were going to get sentenced to 15 years. You know, what we realized, what I was, didn't know that I know now, was they were addicts, not criminals. And so Marshall introduced me to a gentleman named Paul. Paul Pellinger and Marshall had helped create the mental health and drug court system 30 years prior in South Florida. And so, you know, through their work, they helped get their sentence reduced, you know, to something that was palatable, because they were addicts, not criminals. And so Marshall, Paul, and I got together. Paul said that, you know, he had this great idea that he's had for years about using music as a catalyst for therapy. My joke was, it can't be worse than anything else that I've been paying for everybody. Paul's good friends with Richie Supa, who had this concept called Recovery Unplugged. The four of us, you know, got together. A gentleman named Rob Harrison came down from Jersey, and he literally said, Rob had been in the industry and had a former Wall Street career. And Rob said, I will, because we needed someone, operator. And he said, I'll come down to help you. But if you guys are doing some Florida insurance thing, or like, if you don't want to actually help people, I'm not doing this. And I thought that was the first call I ever had with him. And, you know, we've been business partners since that day. Cause I said, no, I'm, you know, why we're successful is because we put the clients first, the client second, the clients third. Now, the other side of that that I learned dangerously is that we're not a nonprofit, right? We're a for-profit business. So we have to have financial stability ourselves to be able to help more people.
Yeah.
I did not know that. I didn't internalize that in the beginning, which is why just believing, right? You have to have belief in yourself and what you do, but you also have to be financially stable. Just believing you're doing good and thinking that you're just, everything's going to work out, almost destroyed us and me. And so why we're so successful is because the music, using music does not mean that, like, you play the guitar or you listen to a song and you're all better, but it breaks down the defenses and builds rapport. And so where we've been successful, Nova Southeastern University has done a 7-year outcome study and why our outcomes are 4 times better than anything else in the country. And the reason is, when we are able to reach people, we're able to break down that defense and build rapport early on so that our traditional evidence-based therapy can work. Whereas most people go to a 30-day program, 2-month program, the first 29 days, they're fighting to leave. They don't want to be there, right? So they get 1 day of therapy. With us, within 24 to 48 hours, we've broken through. Doesn't mean it's going to work. There is no cure. There is no silver bullet, but we're able to get through that first or second layer so that our therapy could actually work. And so what we learned early on was using different forms of music, from, you know, vibration and frequency rooms for people detoxing, to, you know, lyrics and songs for people in our residential program, to having musical prescriptions and playlists when people leave.
Wow.
Right. So it's not that, oh, you get into, you know, you want to go have a drink or go buy dope. You listen to a song and you're better. But that song, when you're 6 months or a year clean, it reminds you to stay in the present, call your sponsor, go to a meeting, right? That's the positive triggers versus the negative triggers. And then finally, what we realized, what we didn't know originally, was that the music itself helps our therapists and our nurses. So we have music for the clients, but in every one of our facilities, there's different music playing based off the preferences of the people working at that time in that location. Because when they're more calm and they're happier, they do a better job. And I, unfortunately and fortunately, had to experience this myself in 2021. I joked right after we bought the company back and went through that tumultuous time. I said to my wife, that was the most, you know, ridiculous, horrible experience. I'm glad that it happened. This is July of 2021. Said, you know, I need to take a couple weeks off. The rest of the year is just going to be smooth. 2 weeks later, we held a barbecue at my house for our friends that we hadn't seen because of COVID. The barbecue exploded. I exploded with it.
What?
I ended up in the ICU and stayed in the burn unit, Ryder burn unit, for weeks, and had first degree, second degree, and almost third degree burns on my feet.
Wow.
My feet still damaged, and I have nerve damage. But the point being, when I was in the hospital, I used our own methods. So not only did I have, I couldn't use my hand, my hands were all burnt. I had the nurse help me. So I had different music I was listening to every day. But what I did in the hospital is I asked each nurse, there were 3 shifts, 3 8-hour shifts, what their favorite music was. And so I won't get into details, but I had procedures and where they had to clean the skin. It was the most painful thing you could ever experience in your life. But when I played the music that the nurse, right? I had one nurse, she loved Enrique Iglesias. Another nurse loved, you know, Pearl Jam or Metallica. So I didn't care what the song was, but when their music was playing, they were happier. I felt better. I got treated better.
Great.
It's the same thing that we do in our own center. So I had to experience that and it worked.
Interesting. That's a great story. Now, you mentioned you had partners and you, there's the theme. You've had partners, it seems, throughout many of the businesses. What has been the advantage in your mind to having partners versus not having partners?
I can't do everything, nor do I want to, nor do I know how to. Right. And so, you know, I have without our operating team, Recovery Unplugged doesn't exist. Nothing I do exists. Right. When I was in the insurance business, to this day, I can't do paperwork. I could get in front of somebody to this day, flip a switch and explain how insurance works, whether you're doing an estate plan or a term policy. I could do it in my sleep. But if I have to fill out the paperwork and talk to an underwriter, like, that's not how I process. At Recovery Unplugged, you know, we have sales, marketing, finance, and then we have operations. I am not a doctor. I don't pretend to be one on TV. I'm not a therapist. I don't pretend to be one on TV. And so, you know, having people that, you know, can operate is the only, for me, having operating partners in everything I've done when I had the call center, in any business that I've been part of, you know, I'm a visionary. I have big thoughts, themes, ideas, you know, I can motivate a team and myself, but if it comes to details and operations, you know, if I am required to do that, it's not going to be pretty.
That's great. Okay. So I have time for one more question, and I've been curious since the second we got on Zoom together. You have four things behind you. And if you could pick just one of them, I see something with Muhammad Ali, I believe, for those that are just listening, I'll describe. There's something with Muhammad Ali. There looks like to be a picture from the moon and its Earth. I see some sort of currency hanging there. And then Richard Branson. Tell us about one of these and what's inspirational to you about those.
They're all inspirational. You know, Muhammad Ali, about never giving up. I can't just talk about them. You know,
go ahead. It's too interesting.
You know, and his, you know, desire with all the adversity that came at him just to keep going. The picture from the moon to Earth, which is actually signed by everybody at the time that had gone to the moon. I've always been a big fan of space. I once rented a big 25 in Russia, flew to the edge of the atmosphere, broke the sound barrier, went Mach 2, but I've never been to space. It's on my things to do in the next 10 years, maybe five. And just the idea of being out there and doing something, going beyond reason and logic. And that also ties into, you know, Richard Branson. I read Richard Branson's book when I was, you know, 18, his first book, and then just looked at what he's done in his life as far as creating businesses and doing good in the world and enjoying life.
Yes.
So I've tried to emulate, you know, creating, you know, sustainable businesses that also do good in the world. And I've also, like I said, rented a MIG and climbed mountains and swam with great white sharks. And because of that picture right there, I was on a Zoom a year ago, somebody saw it, and then I got invited and got to go to Necker Island and meet Richard last March.
With
the Maverick group, with Yannick and the Maverick group. And that was only because somebody saw that and asked me why I had it there. And I said, one of my goals was to meet him and go to his island. And that happened.
Amazing. Okay. Well, what about is that currency above that?
Oh, that's just, you know, that was from, that's a joke from Coming to America.
Oh, okay. The movie?
Well, no, the reason why that's there is because it's a fake currency, because, you know, my view of it, you know, is, you know, money is an illusion, right? If you, you know, it's all about what you do with it, not just having it. So I have that there as a reminder that
Good.
It could be, $100 million right there, but if it's sitting on my wall and not doing good, right? Money is what you're doing with it, not just to have it.
Oh, that's such a great way to end. Andrew, thank you so much for taking time with me today. I'm so appreciative of everything you've shared with us today. It's amazing.
I greatly appreciate the opportunity to be here. I'm glad we got introduced by Justin. I look forward to more in the future together.
Awesome. And to all the amazing entrepreneurs listening today, I greatly appreciate you spending time with us. And as always, I wish you much love and gratitude.